Newton, reel 10. Would your day, as in all the other camps, your day would start with a roll call, did it?
No, it ended with a roll call.
It ended with a roll call. So what time would your working day start?
Well, in the summer, well, even in the winter, about 6 o'clock. And you got up and all you had was a cup of black coffee. Nothing to eat. You got your bread when you came back to camp at night. See?
What happened to your clothing? I mean, over a period of time and working as you were, in quite heavy work, it must have got well worn out. Did they replace the clothing?
We got replaced once, and that was that camp where the aircraft were on the plane. And we were never replaced after that.
And were you able to keep clean in yourselves?
Yes, in this camp, it was well, showers. And of course, we were getting soap from home now, because the German soap was just a piece of green soap, about as big as a matchbox, with grains of sand in it. That's to stop it wearing away too quick. And of course, your towel was just, as I said, just a tea towel. So we had got towels from home by then, sent in your clothing parcels, see? And that's what kept you going. But there was all nationalities worked on this factory. It was a massive, massive factory. I mean, I reckon it would stretch. There was another Stalag building this factory as well. And apparently when it was finished, would have been about 15 miles square. Massive chemical factory. Turning out, well, I think they used to come out on a morning with a copper jug and pour liquid oxygen onto the ground. You know, liquid oxygen, it's a lovely blue colour. And it would freeze the ground. I don't know why he did it, but he used to come out. They were definitely producing liquid gases like hydrogen, oxygen, and that. Fuel for the V2s. They were producing that. But they used to stand the tanks on the sides waiting for transport. And in the middle of 1944, the summer of 1944, the factory was just preparing to produce then. We must have had spies on the factory because we had so many nationalities, Italian, Spanish, even Chinese worked there. You know, all different nationalities.
Were there displaced persons?
Displaced persons and women from the Ukraine, and they all had the big badges on, the Ukrainians. You know, the men was left in Russia, but the women were brought in and had the big square badge Ost on.
How did they treat them? I mean, you must have seen them being treated.
Why, they were poorly treated. And the Russians, they were very, very badly treated.
The Russian prisoners?
Russian prisoners. They had no Red Cross.
And you would see this, did you?
Oh, we weren't in close contact with them, but we'd see them. And some of the chaps did have contact with them. We had a fella there, he was a professor at one of the Newcastle universities. He was only a private in the Tyneside Scottish. And he used to give us lectures in the camp on various things, you know, on insect life and lots of interesting things like that. And he taught himself Russian while he was in the camp. And the Russians used to get, we used to get a German paper printed in English telling all their victories, you know. And they used to always say, we're fighting to the east of such and such a town. And we knew they had retreated back by then, you know, from the town that was, no, fighting to the west of a town. We knew they had retreated from the east of that town. And by that time, a chap wireless set up, and we were getting English news, and we knew the real picture. We had a map on the wall that the German positions are on, and the English positions marked in, you know.
And this was hidden?
Hidden. Oh, aye, they never found that. And then...
The Russian prisoners, before we leave them, did you actually see them beaten in any way?
Well, not beaten, but they were starved, you know. I mean, food was very strict in any form of any kind.
This must have made you quite upset to see that happening.
Well, we had our own troubles. That was it. You saw it. You were inured to it. You know, you just accepted it. I remember one time Russians were building a wall in this, and in the winter, of course, mix the cement with the ice in it. In the summer, the Russians didn't build the wall. The Russians were working beside this wall when the summer melted the ice. They were just left there, you know, where they were buried under these bricks when the wall
came down.
Yes. Oh, yes. They were just the bricks there. There was no attempt to get them out. And then there was one incident when they built building these tanks for gasoline or whatever, these big storage tanks, like gasometers, you know. And they start off, I don't know whether you know how they build a gasometer, but they start with the top. They have the outside built, see, and then they build the top inside, welding it, you know. And then they pull it up, and then they put another row of plates underneath, welded on, and winch that up on chains, chaps on the top, winching these chains up. And they were all different nationalities around the top, you know. They couldn't understand each other. There was no common language. And they're winching away at these chains. They got it nearly finished. And chaps working underneath, winching away, welding. Inside the outside barrier. And one chain went. They weren't winching in unison, shouting different language to each other. And then they went all round, and this whole thing came down on the inside, and the chaps working underneath, well, they were just chopped in half with just like a guillotine coming down, see, and that, a burn holes in the side to get them out, and them that was badly, were just left, of course. There was, life was cheap, see.
Was there any British prisoners injured in their working conditions?
Well, they had, with making this liquid oxygen and that signs up all right, Rankin verboten, see. And there was one Polish guard that had joined the German army, and they were more rotten than the actual Germans, you know. Sort of a Pole that joined the German army. And he gave this lad no warning, and he just shot him for lighting a cigarette. Just like that. Well, he was sent up the Russian front, like, that guard. But apart from that, there was...
So this was a British prisoner that shot him?
Oh, yes. Yes, he just lit a cigarette, and he just shot him like that.
Did you bury your own people that died through illness, or... In this case,
yes, there was a funeral of one chap in the camp, and he was in the DLIs, but he'd been transferred from the Coilies. Yes, they buried him, they gave him a military funeral.
You don't remember his name?
Fowle, his name, Fowle. He was out the Coilies, though, really. So, as time went on, you know, things got better in the camp, more organised. We were living in barracks, about 20 to a room, and we were fairly warm at night, and we had showers. It was more or less like an army life.
Was it wired in, the camp?
Oh,
were the towers set at intervals?
At the corners, yes, towers at the corners.
And inside of the wire, was there this trip wire on which you weren't supposed to go over?
No, there was just a double wire, just a double row wire. And the guards were on the outside of the double row, see. So they were around all night, like. But they made these two battalions that were into one.
How many men would this be then?
Well, I would say about 1,200 men, between 1,200 and 1,500 men. In this sea. But that was two battalions, see. But there wasn't 1,000 in each battalion. And we had two doctors, see, one from each battalion. And we had a pretty good, I used to work at night in the medical room, you know. And we did get issued with German tablets. And of course, Red Cross sent bandages and things, so we're fairly well equipped as a medical unit for looking after the chaps.
What was the main illnesses that the people were catching?
Well, they were fairly fit. There wasn't much. There wasn't much illness at all. Just boils, or you know, just run of the mill.
There's no epidemic like influenza.
No. Luckily enough, we never had anything like that. And then, you know, you slight injuries and things like that. But, let's say now, working up the camp, these big thick cables that once we got the trenches hit, mind, the digging was easy because Poland's all sand. You weren't digging through clay or anything like that. And you, these big thick cables, and you're pulling the cables. And we used to say, we're not working with the French. So they would put a line of French prisoners, a pole in between, and then us.
Why was that? Why didn't they want to work with the French?
Oh, we never got on with the French. We didn't like the French at all. So they're pulling these big cables, there was terrible weight on your shoulder. But we noticed the French, you know, when you're pulling the cables and then you stop, they had a stick just the height of the shoulder. And as soon as they stopped, the stick went under. And they would just start holding the stick. They weren't holding the weight of the... Not very long before we all had sticks.
They
took the weight of the cable instead of holding it. And it used to have on the cable, beware, it's a very thin sheet of lead. Of course, lead was a rare thing. So we should do our best to bend them and break the lead. So the cables would probably be no good when they were probably used. And they started with us, and they said, you've got a section of trench, finish that and you can go back to camp, see? Well, some of the chaps were doing that. We thought, no, to pop with this, we're going to stay out, this gang of us, we're going to stay out the full time and not finish the trench, see? And the guard was shouting at us, and we were just, while he was shouting at one, the others were just. So the whole trench would sort of almost be finished, with ours a block stuck in the middle, stopping them getting the cable in, see? And that went on long enough. This, we were stopping out, it was sunny, you know, stopping out and not finishing the job, just fiddling on. And as the guard was shouting and shouting at us, really the others was laying about, you know, pretending.
Did you get breaks during the working day?
Well, being on a big, funny enough, being on this big thing, there was a canteen on the factory and they had works men run this factory, works police, and they used to bring out a soup at meal time, at dinner time, thin watery soup, of course. And they said it was, after a while on this soup, pay 10 pfennigs and we'll make you a better soup. Everybody got this, you know, Poles, every Italians, anybody working. There was Italians there. Now, they came in luxury buses to this factory to work in Germany. Good suits on. They were coming on a holiday, you know, till the second day, and they found out they were just treated like anybody else. And we had Italians working with us, and the gaffer would send one of the Italians up to where this canteen was. He says, give him orders to pinch a bag of spuds. See? Now, if he got caught, that was his own fault. He was punished. He was sent away to a punishment camp, because they had a punishment camp there as well. And if he got the set of spuds back, of course, they belonged to the boss, not him. But he would send them to get them, sort of thing. And one Italian had a fairly good suit. They had a fairly good civvy suit on. And this boss says to him, I'll buy your suit. I think it was 10 marks he gave him for a suit. Because you didn't get very much money. You know, you got pfennigs for work. And
this was actual German money, not camp money.
That was camp money. Yeah. Camp money we got. But this was German money the Germans had outside. And he gave him these 10 German marks for his suit. Well, later on, about a week after, he sold him a sack of spuds that his mates had pinched for the 10 marks. So really, he'd got a damn good suit for a bag of spuds that somebody else had pinched for him. That's the way it worked. And the Italians weren't unfriendly to us. We couldn't speak to them, like, you know, they just the odd word. But they were a threat, as a matter of fact. The Germans, by then, they could speak to us, the German civvy bosses, and they were saying, keep them Italians working. To us. And the Italians weren't threat as their allies, you know. And they were in a camp just outside our camp, the Italian camp.
So you would get a break where you got this soup?
Got this soup, yes.
What time was your working day finished?
Well, probably about 12 hours, 6 in the morning or 6 at night.
It's a long, long day.
Long day. But it was sunny, you know. And working, digging these trenches, I'd made myself a pair of, because I was pretty good with a needle, and I'd made myself a pair of shorts, you know, and you just had your vest and your shorts on working in the summer, see. It was, made your life a bit more pleasant. Because the Polish summers are pretty hot. And one time, we got a hold of some overalls. Some of the chaps working on the jobs, the overalls, were on the back. I did like white paint, KG, for Kriegsgefangene. See, KG. We used to see a King George, KG, on your back. And I'd got a jacket and a pair of trousers, and I rubbed the KG off the back, and I made myself a little black pig cap. And out on the job one day, there was some of the chaps that fiddled some bread coupons. So I says, right lads, we'll march up to the canteen. And there was no guards about at the time, it was just been these semi-guards, so march them up to the canteen. And of course the works police was standing there in this barrier before the canteen. And I just waved to the jerry guard, and he let us through. And we marched the squad through, and I went in, got the lads the bread, and then marched them back. Because I had this jacket with a peaked cap. They didn't know what nationality I was. Anyway, about, let's see, after D-Day, we got bits of word about D-Day and that, you know, word through. And of course, a big setback was the Battle of the Bulge. That was a big letdown to us, because we were doing so well up to then.
So your spirits were quite high.
Aye.
Then you heard of the battle and that
broke
down.
A bit disappointed, them hitting back.
Did that just show also in the Germans, the way the Germans responded to that? Because they being into a defeat situation, here there was what appeared to be a victory.
No, we didn't notice anything in the, see, because it was getting more civilian contact with us now, you know. And on about the middle, in the middle of the summer, we, reconnaissance planes were coming over. I don't know whether they were very high, mind, very high, just like a pinpoint in the sky. And we just ignored them, you know, just reconnaissance, take no notice. This was in the middle of the day. And one day, we were in this wooden hut, having a smoke, and it had on the wall of the hut, smoking aloud, see, on a notice. And one of the Germans had written, or the Poles had written underneath, them that's got them. So we'd have a smoke, and this, one of these German gaffers said, there was a fine of 20 marks if you were caught smoking. He says, fill me pipe and I'll give them 20 marks. This German gaffer. But anyway, the bombing started on this day, about the middle of 44. That was when the planes could reach us after D-Day. At that time, the Americans was bombing us from Italy. They'd captured half of Italy and they were coming up.
And was this particular bombing raid the very first one that you had?
The very first one there. Apart from one night, there was one lone Russian plane got in. That's the only night bombing we had. It was always daytime bombing. And this one Russian plane, he did as much damage as a big, all his targets were lit up. And he'd followed just the one Russian plane. He'd followed a train in. And he picked his targets and he hit them right on the, you know, the power station, knocked the power station out and just did a hang of a lot of damage, the one plane. But the Germans were coming over, the Americans were coming over in massive raids, you know, about 500, more than 500 bomber raids. And they used to have a chemical that made a haze smoke. And we used to watch this. When the chaps were setting this haze off, we knew by that time, get out the factory. At first, we went back to the camp. See?
And they let you go?
No, the marches back to the camp.
And they marched you back in.
I mean, this was the early raids. And this one day, we were all in the camp, and the camp was bombed. Luckily, we only had one bloke killed, right? And he was killed with suffocation. We were in these, we had trenches built in the sand. And we say, well, air raid today. You know, you had about 2 hours warning of an air raid because they would come on the radio that they were crossing Western Hungary. And you knew about the time of day, so I got a shower. And I remember this day, we were standing in the trenches, and I got covered. And I thought, the mucky justice, you know, when they say I read, I'd just had a shower. And you look out the trench, and I was looking down into the bomb hole. It was dead close. If it had been solid ground, would have had it. But being sand, you could be near to a bomb and it just went flying over your head. But this chap, he dug down into the bottom of the trench and he was buried when the trench dug in. So we dragged him out and we were giving him artificial respiration and what we could do. And another raid came and we had to leave him. And when we got back to him, well, he was gone, sort of. We got the doctor and we got sent the lads out and got an oxygen cylinder off the works. But he was gone.
Did you know him personally, this chap?
Well, you knew most of the chaps, yeah.
But you didn't know his name?
I can't remember his name. He was from down south, you know.
How did you feel about your own side's bombs falling on your camp?
Well, we didn't like it. I mean, we were seeing, we were like rats in a trap here. We were fastened in this barbed wire cage and they were dropping on you. And that time, the factory was practically untouched. What it was, a railway camp line used to run through the camp into the factory. And they followed this railway line and start dropping at the edge of the smoke. The smoke covered our camp. They couldn't see it. And we got the brunt of it.
This was this artificial fog that they put on.
Aye. And of course the huts and that was smashed up and everything. So they dropped. They used to drop a lot of time bombs. And they notices with them that to keep the keep out the factory, was to keep the workers out the factory, they were due to go off any time up to 3 months. See? We still had to go into the factory. But there was two chimneys, very high chimneys. They were built by the Italians. No, they were very good at brickwork and things like that. They built these two chimneys, twin chimneys. And on the top of one of these twin chimneys, a chap had to sit up there during an air raid with a map and pinpoint where these, as far as he could, time bombs had dropped, bombs that hadn't gone off. And one day, they hit the chimney and brought it down. I don't know whether it was the one the chap was up, but it must have been a hell of a job sitting up a chimney in the middle of an air raid. And mind, they shot a good few of our planes down because the firepower that went up them had fields full of rockets. Shoot the lot together, you know. The planes were very high, but a few of them didn't get back.
So this was quite an important complex for the Germans.
Yes. Oh, I was like the German ICI.
And where did you say it was?
Heidebreck. It was in Oberschlesia. It was on the banks of the Oder in southern Poland. Well, it's Germany now, I think. Just across the Oder. And the raids continued after that, you know.
This must have been a clear sign that things were going well for the Allies and hopefully that you were going to get out of it.
Yeah, and the Russians were advancing at the same time. See, but we had no, apart from that one incident, no air raids off the Russians. But by the end of 44, you could hear the front. You could hear the Russian front, the guns in the Russian front. So
this must have had, you must have seen the effect on the Germans with the Russians coming. Were their attitudes changing?
Well, in a way, there was some of them so fanatical, they just carried on the same. I remember one chap, and we were filling a hole in, and of course, we were just putting anything in the hole, working gear, spanners, anything, you know, sabotage. And he was complaining about it. I says, look, I says, the Russians have got your home. He lived in Königsberg, you know, East Prussia. I says, the Russians have got you home, and I says, and you're worrying about a few nuts and bolts. But he was that fanatic. So, as I say, this bombing went on, and these time bombs, and we just carried on as usual. And they used to have Germans on life sentences digging these bombs up. And they had a queer uniform with like black and yellow stripes. And they were digging these. And they used to say, if one of these bombs started to tick, they would throw themselves on the bomb rather than be injured. They would want to be killed outright. And I'd been fiddling this day, getting some bread, and I was walking back to be where my party was, because he used to just say, you're going to the toilet and away fiddling. And I thought, oh, there's men working there, and I hurried past, and I realised at the time it was a party of these men digging a time bomb up.